Buddha, Dharma, the Sangha. The fundamental premise of a formal meditation practice is that if we will just be still, in the right way and for the right purpose, our attitudes will naturally come into alignment with the Buddha nature. In this little series of talks, which this is the third one, I've been giving a little explication of River Master's teaching to me. The importance of looking at truth along a straight line. The last talk I did, I said that the natural spiritual state of things is that straight line. But when we truly meditate, we prove this true for ourselves. As I've said many times, as I've experienced many, many, many times, we can sit down in meditation with an agitated, upset attitude of mind, and 30 or 40 minutes later, get up with a very different, much more peaceful, much more centered, much more compassionate attitude. And all we did was just sit down and look at a wall. I mean, how is that even possible if you think about it? Was possible because we spent some time not feeding the fires of greed, hate, and delusion, but letting them cool down. Or another metaphor that is a very apt one, we think of a container, closed container of water with some soil in it, sand in it, whatever. Instead of continually agitating and shaking up the container, we actually just set it down somewhere and let it be for a while. And the sediment settles to the bottom and the water is clear. Now this is a bit of a simplification because it may be that we sit down and meditate And this is often the case. And just how scattered and turbulent our mind is becomes evident because the body is being still for a while. And so it's as if we're looking into a mirror, seeing the extent of the agitation. But if we keep sitting still through that agitation, which can be very painful, then that settling, that quieting, does happen. This is a feature of meditation, because it actually is the case that the natural state of our mind is to be in harmony with the Buddha nature. And if we don't disrupt that natural state, it will remain in alignment with Buddha nature. And if it has been disrupted and we stop disrupting it, it will naturally go back into alignment. This is by no means to underestimate or underemphasize the power of what's called the habit energy of karma. The tendency to do things that habitually, unreflectively, that disrupt throw things out of balance spiritually, and then for that disruption to reverberate, sometimes for long periods of time. Because these karmic jangles have such deep roots, that the need for faith and for determination is so great. Why there is no substitute for dedicated, serious, long-term training in meditation and the precepts. I want to say a few words about the emotions. Emotions can function as valuable signals that give us practical readout on the meaning of our sense experience. I'll give a little example. I'll give a couple examples, just kind of daily life examples. Suppose one is walking in a city and one absentmindedly steps out, or perhaps one stumbles out into the line of traffic. If you've ever done that, you know that you get a real surge of fear. Well, that surge of fear has a purpose. It's so that you won't just stand there, not comprehending the meaning of a car or a bus coming down on you and about to hit you. The information coming from your eyes gets a quick interpretation, and the emotion of fear provides a powerful and jolt to get you to jump out of the way fast. In fact, this often happens so that you don't actually really feel the fear till after the event. But what that fear originated as was the shot of emotional juice to get one to act quickly, get out of trouble. We take another instance which isn't an emergency kind of situation, but think of the devoted effort that human parents make to care for their children, for their young, for years and years. Most animals care for their young, if at all, for only a very short time. Only a few animals look after the young for more than a few months. And in human beings carry this further than almost any other animal. This is necessary for the survival of the kind of beings that we are. And what is the feeling that helps stimulate parents to make this incredible effort on behalf of their offspring? Well, it's the feeling that we think of as the feeling of love. And one of its many aspects is There's parental love, there's many other aspects of love. Love, in the spiritual sense, is far more than a feeling. Yet here we can speak of love as, or a particular feeling as, exemplifying love and helping provide a very powerful incentive. In those relatively few cases that do happen where parents, for some reason, or a parent usually, for some reason doesn't feel love for the child, there are really serious problems. That very state of affairs, the inability to feel love, where love is so needed, is itself a really serious problem. And it engenders others. And again, that is relatively, that is being a very rare in human experience. It does happen. So here we see a couple examples of emotions providing a help for us to do what is good to do. And when our body and mind is in alignment, is in harmony with the Buddha nature, this is how the emotions function. As we all know, however, the emotions can get out of hand. And in the heat of passion, we can do things which are really self-destructive and that can be harmful both to ourselves and to others. So it's very, very important to distinguish between properly functioning emotions that are actually helpful and emotional states which, if we act upon them, will create exactly that turbulence, spiritual turbulence, those spiritual jangles which can make it very difficult for us to look at truth along a straight line. In general, emotionalism is not helpful. Emotionalism refers to situations in which we allow ourselves to be carried away by emotions. In which we keep doing things that keep us getting caught by and run by our emotions. And this is true for any emotions. It's true for ecstasy, it's true for the most wonderful states of love, you think, well, how could that be? You know, people just as a result of just an experience of a certain form of merit coming due, people can have very ecstatic states, and these can have a very powerful emotional element. The Reverend Master described it, love beyond our wildest dreams. Well, this is not at all a bad thing, and it's not necessarily the best time when one is in one of these states to be making choices that might have very serious consequences. In other words, it's usually best, almost always best, to sit still till things are back more in a more normal state. If this is true of genuine ecstasy, how much more is it true of anger, sexual desire, envy, terror, frustration, insecurity, grief. The emotions are not a refuge. They have their uses. They can be wonderfully helpful. They certainly make our existence more lively than if we didn't have them at all. And they're powerful stuff. They need to be treated carefully. It is also true that emotions all have the Buddha nature. All existence and all aspects of existence have the Buddha nature. Therefore, there is no emotion that is some kind of fundamental evil. We think of the terrible things that we are capable of doing in the grip of hatred, for example. But hatred itself, the emotion, does not do action. We do actions with our will. We choose to do things. And we can choose not to. If hatred is arising, we can choose to sit still. If love is arising, we can choose to sit still. If desire is arising, we can choose to sit still. We can choose to wait it out rather than run down a path that might result in something very, very harmful and painful. partially in reaction to a kind of cultural and educational brainwashing that places the intellect on a kind of throne. There has been, especially in the last 2 centuries or so, in Western civilization, a kind of counter movement that places emotion and spontaneous, unreflective action passion on a kind of throne. And it should be obvious, these are opposites. Over-reliance on intellect, overemphasis on intellect and intellectual understanding, rationalism, overemphasis on passion, emotion, what people think of as spontaneity. Though in actual fact, action out of passion isn't really spontaneous. It's just falling down the old groove again one more time. When our mind is in turmoil, we do not see clearly. When our body and mind are not at peace, but are agitated, we do not easily recognize what is truly good to do. If we want to be able to look at truth along a straight line, we need to develop the habit of withdrawing within and reflecting upon the self. Allowing the illusory self to settle down and quieten so that the real self, the true self, the Buddha nature, can get a word in edgeways. The still small voice is not easily heard when there's a big commotion going on. Whether that commotion be intellectual argument and analysis, or whether that commotion be emotional turmoil, the net result is the same. We don't hear what we really need to hear. feel. And if our body and mind is allowed to reharmonize naturally with our true nature, we will still be beings who feel. And the more truly we are in harmony with our Buddha nature, the more fully we are in harmony with our Buddha nature, most of the time, the brighter and lighter and truer are the feelings that we have. Emotions continue to fulfill their natural function and in fact do it all the better because they are not being skewed. By non-perceptual actions.